The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the July-August issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And let's go right to the front cover. We have a picture here of a baseball player from the Detroit Tigers. And the caption says, Tiger King, how Detroit's Tariq Skubal unleashed the beast within to send the Tiger roaring toward a pennant. Well, let's find out what else we have besides the Tigers going on in this issue. The lineup. We have our faves. Page 2, freeze frame. Sports cards on page 7. Hot take on page 9. Birthdays on page 11. Posters, page 27. On page 31, we have the treehouse. Page 52, we have What's the Call? Games on page 53. Art gallery, page 54. And on page 56, we have Buzz Beamer. And some of our featured articles on page 16. What if once a game, a super play cleared the benches and everyone took the field? How about the Red Sox in green, the White Sox in red, Major League Baseball City Connect jerseys provide a whole new look on page 20. Page 22, we have flag football is everywhere. How the easiest sport to play charmed its way into the Olympics. The 2025 Hall of Cool inductees have arrived, page 42. And on page 48, Cooper Flagg was just drafted number one by Dallas. This young basketball star is on the rise. Well, here we are in freeze frame, page 2. You have a picture here of who looks like Coco Gauff. Kicking butt. June 7th, 2025, Paris, France. After losing the first set in the final, Coco Gauff stormed back to beat world number one Aryna Sabalenka and win the French Open 6-7, 6-2, 6-4. The 21-year-old Gauff, who is ranked number 2, put on a brilliant defensive display, goading Sabalenka into 70 unforced errors and becoming the first player from the United States to win in Paris since Serena Williams in 2015. And our next freeze frame. We have a picture of a young lady here, but let's go on to who's who in sports, and let's look at that first row, and we have Aryna Sabalenka, tennis. Her height is 5'11". She was born May 5th, 1998, hometown Minsk, Belarus. With 20 singles titles to her name and career earnings over $36 million, Sabalenka is the number one ranked player in the world. In 2025, she advanced to both the French Open and Australian Open finals and has lost only 7 of the 40 WTA Tour matches she has played this year. She won the Australian Open in 2023 and 2024 and the U.S. Open in 2024. Did you know that Sabalenka's forearm tattoo earned her the nickname The Tiger? Next, we have C.J. Kirst, Cornell Big Red Attack. His height is 6'2". His weight is 210 pounds. He was born January 11th, 2002, hometown Bernardville, New Jersey. Kirst tied the NCAA single-season record with 82 goals this year and holds the all-time career record for goals, 247. The three-time first-team All-American led the Big Red to its first national championship in 48 years, scoring 6 goals in a career-high 16-shot attempts in the title game against Maryland. Did you know, though, Syracuse has won the lacrosse championship 10 times, the most of any Division I school. And finally, we have Kendall Coyne Schofield. Height, 5'2". She was born May 25, 1992, hometown, Palos Heights, Illinois. The Frost captain won her second Walter Cup this year, scoring 2 goals in 8 playoff games. She has represented the United States in 3 Olympic Winter Games, bringing home 1 gold and 2 silver medals. She also appeared on 11 International Ice Hockey Federation Women's World Championship teams and 9 Four Nations Cups. Did you know, though? Coyne Schofield won this year's Walter Cup, awarded to the PWHL champ, one day after her 33rd birthday. Warm up. Don't cry for Dallas. Kids get a bad rap in the complaints department, complaining that bedtime is too soon, that birthdays are too far away, that vegetables taste horrible. Can't we agree that being nutritious just isn't as fun as going full send on junk food like the dugout Dagwood we invented on page 46 of our last issue? But you know who just wouldn't stop complaining, hollering, throwing a fit about what a bad hand they were given this year? Dallas. Mavericks fans were beside themselves after Luka Doncic was traded to the Lakers in February. And look, they're not wrong that they were totally wronged. Protests outside the stadium and chants to fire general manager Nico Harrison went on forever. Fans were not happy. So I'll indulge for a moment. Doncic was a franchise player, the kind who rarely, if ever, would have been traded at a point in his career where he has done so much for his team. At 26 years old, he has more first-team All-NBA selections than Steph Curry or Dirk Nowitzki, and was paramount in the Mavs' run to the NBA Finals in the 2023-24 season. Doncic averaged a league-high 33.9 points per game this year. We are talking about a real talent. And I agree, it was a cringe to hear Harrison talk about how defense wins championships and then watch Anthony Davis miss multiple weeks because of an injury after the trade. It was wild, and I could chow down on that drama like it was a Fenway Frank. But you Dallas fans can only complain so much before I have to chime in and end this gluttonous run. Sure, the Mavs didn't make it to the playoffs, but you know who did? The Dallas Stars. They were on fire this year, and not just in 2024-25. This was the Stars' 3rd consecutive appearance in the Western Conference Finals, and over the past 10 years, they've made it to the postseason 7 times. The Mavs only had 5 trips to the playoffs in the last decade. Okay, one might complain that I'm talking hockey. So let's compare apples to apples. Or rather, let's compare ice cream to an ice cream cake. What about basketball? Did Dallas basketball fans forget they got the number 1 pick in the 2025 WNBA draft and landed the legendary Paige Bueckers out of UConn? The rookie guard is off to an amazing start, breaking records by becoming the fastest player in WNBA history to reach 200 points and 50 assists. On top of that, she had an incredible 35-point career-high game against Phoenix. That draft pick is proving a major win and one that is bound to deliver a victory sweeter than a blue velvet whoopie pie. And while we're at it on the issue of draft picks in Dallas, you know what I'm going to say. The Mavericks nailed perhaps the luckiest lottery pick in NBA history with a meager 1.8% chance of getting the first pick. In fact, the only other team from the same city to get number 1 draft picks in both the WNBA and NBA in the same year was Cleveland in 2003. Is that rare? Talk about an underdog moment. And speaking of dogs, a Dodger dog might just be next on the menu. And then, who did the Mavs pick in the draft? Dukes Cooper Flagg. You can read all about him on page 48. This kid is as talented as they come and one of the most sought-after NBA rookies we've ever seen in years. He is a generational talent. So forgive me, Dallas fans, if I'm not rushing for the tissue box on this one. And as far as football goes, with Dak Prescott as quarterback and an awesome trade this spring that put George Pickens on the team, the Cowboys' offense is sparkling some serious optimism. Because the truth is, the team you love will eventually make a dumb move, but if you sit tight long enough to eat all your favorite ballpark foods, the universe will course correct, and your headaches and stomach aches are bound to subside. Dallas just got really lucky that it happened so fast. Video review. Ball players, they're just like you. It's official. Even if you grow up to become a professional baseball player, someone is going to be hassling you over your screen time. Major League Baseball gives each team 20 iPads for use during games. Most are claimed by hitters, who pore over their swing mechanics and review the pitcher's offerings. They are helpful, Texas Rangers manager Bruce Bochy admits, but I think we get a little caught up in the process instead of watching the game and competing out there. There's times when guys do something good, come in, and their teammates' heads are down. So earlier this year, Bochy took his team screens away. They scored 15 runs in their first game without them. The other teams, such as the Braves and the Dodgers, have experimented with the same thing. It's not just a question of keeping players focused on the field. Videos on the iPad are cut to begin when a pitcher begins his motion, so it's harder for a hitter to pick up on a pitcher's timing or any tells he might have that could tip his pitch selection. Screen data can also be taken out of context. A tablet might inform a hitter that a pitcher often throws a curveball in a certain situation. But if the guy in the mound is struggling with his curve, he's far less likely to throw it. And according to Washington Nationals manager Davey Martinez, who took the devices away for the final month of last season, you miss how quick the game really is. On the iPad, you can make it slow. Still, going screenless is no guarantee for success. After their 15-run outburst, the Rangers scored once in their next two outings. They got their iPads back. You don't want to take away any resource that might make them better, Bochy says, but it's also just a reminder, hey, it's okay to watch the game. Birthdays. July 11th, Buffalo Bills defensive end Joey Bosa turns 30. July 13th, Cody Bellinger of the New York Yankees will also be 30 years old. Sprinter Noah Lyles celebrates his 28th birthday on the 18th. And on the 27th of July, Gotham FC forward Mack Whittam will turn 15. Future star Luka Mijatovic, hometown Pleasanton, California. Birth date April 22, 2009, sport swimming. Luka Mijatovic knows that hard work pays off. During the school year, he wakes up at 4 a.m., eats a bagel, and goes to practice before classes. Waking up at 4 in the morning sucks, says Luka, but knowing I can share a lane with my friends is awesome. So are the results. At the United States Nationals in June, Luka, 16, broke the 17-18 age group records in the 200-meter freestyle, a mark previously held by Michael Phelps. In 400-meter freestyle, Luka also became the youngest United States swimmer since Phelps to qualify for the World Championship. While Luka says competing at the 2028 Olympics would be a dream, it may not be far from becoming reality. It has some nice pictures of Luka here in the water, doing his thing in the water. Are you a future star? If you think you have what it takes to be a future star, have an adult submit your nomination at sportskids@si.com. The matrix of many mishaps, still in warm-up. Sometimes things just happen. One day you're on the highlight reel from the French Open because you made an incredible belly flop shot, recovered, rushed the net, and still won the point. Another day is because you accidentally lost track of how many out there were and took your sweet time throwing the ball back into play. Ideally, when you appear on the Jumbotron, it's because you brought your giant pet rabbit to a baseball game. That's just something everybody wants to see. Whether these moments are cringe or hilarious, or maybe even enormously adorable, we decided to compare some recent LOLs and OMGs for the world of sports. Eating crow. Pete Crow, Armstrong of the Cubs, caught what he thought was an inning-ending fly ball against the Cardinals, but there was a problem. It was the second out. That allowed a run to score from second in an 8-7 loss. Oops! Springy Springer. Max Schumann of the A's noticed Toronto's George Springer hopping up and down after safely reaching third base. He tagged Springer out and killed a Jays rally. Where's Coach? Coastal Carolina lost a core teammate member when Coach Kevin Schnall was ejected in the first inning of the game two in the Men's College World Series. It wasn't the only thing that Chanticleers lost. LSU claimed its eighth national title when the Tigers beat Coastal 5-3. Stephen A. Solitaire. There was an uproar when ESPN Stephen A. Smith was photographed playing solitaire on his phone during the NBA Finals. His defense, the Solitaire King said, "I only play during timeouts." Bad pass. Haiti scored a surprising goal against the USMNT in the Gold Cup when goalkeeper Matt Freeze passed the ball to the opposing team. Luckily, the U.S. ended up victorious, winning 2-1. A flop and a win. Ben Shelton's dramatic belly flop shot caught the attention of French Open fans when he fell to the clay in a scramble to return a shot from Italy's Matteo Gigante. The best part, he won the point. Choke. Tyrese Halliburton sank a long shot at the buzzer in Game 1 of the conference finals against the Knicks, sending the game into OT. The Pacers guard thought he had hit a game-ending three and mimicked Reggie Miller's famous choke sign. The shot was killer, just not a game-ender. Whoops! Heads up. Isaiah Hartenson celebrated the Thunder's NBA Finals with an adorable addition to the court, his 13-month-old son, Elijah. But it was SGA who noticed the baby's head flopping to the side. The league MVP offered a helping hand in a post-game moment that went adorably viral. A giant help. Alex the Great is his name, and being a therapy rabbit is his game. A huge bunny made a big statement when a fan brought his pet to a San Francisco Giants game. Apparently, this big bunny is a regular at games where its owner invites fans to come and say hi. Oh, isn't that sweet? What if... Here's a bunch of characters in the middle of the page with referees raising their hands, scratching their heads. What if, one of the nice things about youth sports is that everybody plays. Sure, there are people who will argue that participant trophies are meaningless and a sign that society is in decay, to which we say, bah, humbug. We're old school around here. You play sports as a kid for the joy of playing sports, and everyone should have a chance to experience that, as well as all other emotions that come with competition. Now that we're done speechifying, let's talk about professionals. They're playing to win, not to mention what can often be a hefty paycheck. So it makes sense that coaches rigorously manage everyone's playing time to give their team its best chance to succeed. But we are being hypocritical by endorsing that strategy. I mean, if everyone in a kid's game should play, why shouldn't that apply to adults? And think about the fans. Often their favorite players are the ones at the end of the bench. Let's say you love Oklahoma City Thunder forward Jalen Williams. Your parents know this, so they dole out big money for Game 7 of the NBA Finals, giving you a chance to see Jay Will on a, win a title. And what happens? The Thunder win the championship, but Williams doesn't get off the bench. How do we reconcile these two schools of thought? And while we're at it, how do we reward teams who build a solid roster through and through instead of top-loading it with a few megastars and filling out the remaining spots with the inexpensive guys who will never be asked to contribute meaningfully? Allow us to present to you the super play. What if, once per game, coaches had to empty their benches and put every single player on the field at the same time? Basketball. As would be the case in most sports, a basketball super play would lead to a pretty hectic, crowded situation. 30 players on a 94-foot floor. So let's up the ante. To induce teams to figure out something that might actually yield a bucket, any scoring on a super play will count triple. Down 8 with 25 seconds left, a super play basket from behind the arc, herein known as a super tray, gives you the lead. That's unlikely to happen, though, which isn't a bad thing. The modern NBA is all about spacing the floor to set up open three-pointers. It's kind of boring, but how can you space the floor when there's literally no space on the floor? No, a team's biggest weapon on a super play would be a really tall player who could outjump everyone else. Your best bet, chuck the ball towards the rim and let the big guy get it for a six-pointer. Football, the granddaddy of the super plays. Nearly 100 guys on the field at the same time, just like every bad game of touch football you've had to play in PE class when the teacher didn't feel like trying that day. It would be almost impossible to come up with a big play against 50-some defenders, unless there's a hidden ball trick at play. And we like that. However, with the existence of our triple points rule, coaches would likely be tempted to save the super play for when they're near the goal line, where they could just muscle the ball into the end zone for 18 points. So there would have to be a rule barring the super play used inside the opposing team's 20-yard line. No one wants to see a 100-person tush push that could last for hours. Hockey. This would be a tricky one, given the existence of backup goaltenders and the small size of the net. Goalies already wear so much gear that they nearly cover the entire goal opening by themselves. Add another guy in there and nothing gets passed. Also, hockey is already a crowded sport with guys camping out in front of the other. To fix that, an NHL super play would need to bring some chaos to force things to open up. The solution? The super play lasts for 2 minutes, during which the Zamboni is also on the ice and is driven by the home team's mascot. Golf. Sure, most people think of golf as an individual sport. But let's not forget about the caddies. What if, once per round, the guy toting the clubs had to use the one? Most of them are sneaky good players themselves, so it might lead to some exciting moments. At the par 3 competition at the 218 Masters, Jack Nicklaus had his 15-year-old grandson, GT, caddy for him. Per tradition, Nicklaus let GT take a shot at the ninth hole. The kid knocked in the hole for an ace. Nicklaus, who has won the Masters a record 6 times, said it was the most special moment he'd experienced in the venue. We would have called it super. Soccer. Depending on the competition, we'd be looking at 18 to 23 players on the pitch for each team during a super play. It would work better as a timed event like in hockey. Set pieces in soccer often see the defending team set up a wall. Now we'd have the possibility of a super wall, a veritable human shield a team could build in front of its goal. And to open up a little more space at the field level, during a super play, it would be legal for teams to build their walls upward and for offensive teams to do the same. Let's make the game about aerial domination. And finally, baseball, well, and here's where the super play loses steam. The problem is that baseball isn't played 9-on-9. It's more or less a series of 9-on-1 confrontations. And a super play would just make those 26-on-1. Still, the triple result factor would bring some drama. Here's how it'd work. A single would become a triple. A homer would be 3 ones. A triple would mean 9 total bases, so 2 runs plus a runner on first. If nothing else, it will help young fans learn to multiply fractions, but still, it's not a terrible idea. It would mean more players on the field, and the more, the merrier. Let's go to What's the Call? Head games. Buzz and Liz are playing a beach volleyball match against Whitney and Kip at the island. Whitney dinks the ball over the net and Buzz loses his footing as he tries to hit it. As he's falling, he heads the ball over the net, where it lands in play untouched. Buzz and Liz celebrate. Whitney and Kip insist it's an illegal hit. What's the call? Do 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 do. Buzz and Liz win the point. While not advisable, it is legal for a player to hit the ball over the net with their head. How about one more? We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.